jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Round 8 already. Wow, that's really flown.
Yep. Third of the way through. It's definitely flying by, but in terms of Supercoach, we're just hitting, you know, that upgrade season. So hopefully everybody's excited about turning their players from rookies into premiums and to get some better scoring on field. But we've got a special guest joining us this week. Faz, welcome back, mate.
G'day, gents. Very happy to be back again.
Hopefully you've been scoring well in your absence from the show, Faz. As we do each week, we will start with a personal update. So why don't you kick us off for the week?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I'll be able to match your level of enthusiasm from a few weeks ago. So I've been plodding along all right, just sort of waiting ground at about the 5,000 rank. So sort of
not bad.
Riding, you know, had the bad week that everyone else did last week. This week had quite a few rookies on field, but was saved, I guess, by Buddy Franklin's 160. So that really helped. But I did have the new guys in Vickers Willis and Parsons both on field. So that hurt quite a bit. And Harley Balich as well. I kept Pal Pepper's 60 on the bench. So not a huge amount of points in the end, but you know, all those things contributed to a pretty low. So just managed to crack the 2,000 this week. But yeah, so that sort of has me sitting steady about 5,000.
I'm pretty sure that gives you the top score for the week out of the three of us anyway, Fad. So congrats to yourself.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that.
No, both Mark and myself had Green on the bench together with Nane Curvis. So I think we both would have dodged Parsons' 19, but instead we were handed his 19 on a silver platter, which is a little bit annoying. But, you know, all things considered, Green, Nane Curvis, and then Beams are laid out. Yeah, I was reasonably happy with my team scoring 1993. I've got Nank back this week, hopefully Green back next week. And, you know, I bit the bullet. I made a double downgrade last week, despite the fact that I could have side-swapped Beams for Franklin, who was a key target. In hindsight, maybe I should have done that. But, you know, I'm playing the long game, and if I'm still sitting in, you know, the top 1,000 with, you know, stacked up with rookies, I'll be pretty happy as long as Parsons and Black don't get dropped this week. I think the cost up front will be worth it in the long run. So I'm down to 687th, which I'm still very happy about. Mark, how'd you go, mate?
Pretty crappy week for me. You beat me by 5 points. I dropped about 1,000 spots more. So the last 2 weeks I've dropped from about 580th to 4,100. So pretty brutal couple of weeks, to be honest. Dunny wanted me to mention that he beat both of us this week, and he would have loved to have been here to rub that in a bit.
In terms of the top scorer for our group, that was Brendan's Goldie Locked with 2256, which was a pretty massive score considering the circumstances this round, and that pushed him up into 16,000th. In terms of the overall leader for our group, that's James's MTM All-Stars. He's currently ranked 9th, which is absolutely awesome, with a score of 2232, so a massive score pushing him up into the top 10. And just also a shout out to Dave, who's 0 and 22, that's his team name. He scored 2243 and his overall rank is 15. So congratulations to you both. That's a massive result.
Can I just give a shout out to Jack, who was on a couple of our preseason shows? He is currently ranked 51st, so doing quite well. We might hopefully try and get him on the show again soon.
That sounds like a good plan, Mark. To a league update, we did slip in terms of having the top 10 leagues all to ourselves. One of our competitors has rocketed up into third. But what I can say is we have consolidated on the top 14. So we have 13 of the top 14 leagues. Not third, but 13 of the top 14. And I'd like to think that that's still a pretty good record. So overall, the community is still doing well. So
we should, Marcus, also mention we are number one league in Real Dream Team.
Yes. A fair accomplishment considering there's a cash prize at the end of that rainbow, Mark. So hopefully we get to that little pot of gold. That'd be quite nice.
Very nice indeed. And I think Mick is sitting in sixth overall in that comp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we'll wish him all the best. In terms of what we're going to talk about this week, the conversation's really centering around the fact that there's a bit of a rookie desert at the moment. It's a bit of a struggle to find any legitimate downgrade targets. And unfortunately, that affects both upgrades and downgrades. I know that quite a lot of people did double downgrades last week, so we're still definitely going to look at upgrade options this week as well. So that'd basically be the focus of the show. How to potentially deal with the fact that cash generation, Mark, seems quite limited at the moment.
I did a double downgrade last week because I thought, yeah, there's some good rookies available, and the two that I brought in were Vickers, Willis and Parsons, who scored 54 points between them on my field.
Let's move on to the show now. We'll start off with the rookie discussion. So it doesn't really look like there's going to be very many rookies available. Sir Eaton Scones, he's looking to downgrade this week. Is Ben McNeese the best choice, assuming he plays? Any other suggestions? So we do get a few questions about Ben McNeese because he was listed as rested after two rounds out. So
that's weird.
Yeah, do you think he's coming straight in, boys, as Essendon supporters? What are your thoughts?
My guess is not. What do you reckon, Buzz?
Didn't think Marty Gleeson really covered himself in glory on the weekend, so I do see that spot as being potentially available. I think it's still floating at the moment at Essendon, so I wouldn't love it as a rookie pick in Supercoach for the fact that I'm not confident that any individual will hold the position down, but I can definitely see McNeese coming back this week.
Mark, why do you reckon he's not going to make it in your team?
Probably because, like, I know that Gleeson's had a bad couple of games, and that's why he went back to the VFL, but he's just so highly rated around the club that I would have thought that they'd probably persist with him a bit. But then again, McNeese is 25 years old and he did some amazing things on Anzac Day. So look, it wouldn't surprise me if he comes in. I guess his scoring's not going to be great. Job security's not going to be great. Could secure himself a spot and play out the season. And at 100,000, I guess that if he plays one game, you're going to get a price rise out of him, a decent one, because it's not going to take much to go up in value since he's so cheap.
I just think that with the number of backline rookies that we have quite ripe at the moment, there's quite a focus on trying to find the backline downgrade option.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to be, like, if you're downgrading Hampton, you wouldn't want to be playing McNeese on field. If you're downgrading to a spot on field, you just wouldn't do that with McNeese, I don't think. Look, it's interesting to sort of weigh up McNeese versus maybe someone like Jared Berry or one of those more expensive guys that's already gone up in price. Berry's played a bit more midfield the last couple of weeks and has back-to-back 60s. He's 170,000 though, so that's not a great trade either. I think none of them are very good options this week.
Before we go to the players that have gone up in price, because we did get questions about them, let's go quickly to Kurt Mutimer. He's played the last two games scoring 23 and 58. He's priced 124,000 playing for West Coast, named in the midfield. I'll be honest, I don't actually know a huge amount about Kurt. Do either of you?
No,
I've literally just seen that he was drafted 57, so he's low draft pick. But that's all I know at this stage. I haven't seen either of the West Coast games, I don't think.
There's a chance that all three of us just happen to be naive and he's a great pick, but that sort of raises alarm bells to me. If none of us sort of know who he is, it feels like he may be a selection that's come in a little bit more based on the fact that they might be a bit light on for options rather than on his own undeniable form.
Yeah, because like if he was a good option, probably we would have been inspired to go and find out more.
Yeah.
I've just sort of been fairly dismissive of him as an option. But
I do know he was listed as senior emergency in round two. Before he made it into the Fremantle game, he had 29 possessions and 11 clearances in a win that sort of really helped him secure a spot. But overall, he does seem to be a bloke that averages more in the high teens, low 20s in the waffle, as opposed to sort of a 29 plus disposal player on the regular. So I would be concerned that he still has a little bit more player development left in him, even though he potentially has good impact with the ball. The number of games that he does get sort of that high disposal rate may be a little bit low, and that impact on his ability to get consistent sort of senior games at the moment.
Yeah, he's had a 23 and a 58.
You wouldn't be trading him in, Mark, even if you kind of forced into a downgrade, even though sort of the midfield you potentially could hide a player?
I traded in Zach Fisher, who...
Oh, gosh, let's not talk about that.
Out after his third game.
Jesus.
I got Parsons in my team, good chance he's going to be out of his third game. So, sure, let's bring another one of those guys in.
So we know where you stand. Faz, will you also be avoiding?
I will be. I did the double down last week because I was sort of wary that there didn't seem to be too many options. I actually thought there was none. So that I guess that says something, that I looked at all. I tried to see who debuted last week and thought that there were zero players, and apparently there is one. So sorry, Kurt. he does exist. Yeah, I'll be avoiding.
I'd have McNeese ahead of Mutimer if you had to pick between the two.
Agree with that.
Based on what we've seen so far this year, there's going to be extra premiums and other rookies and stuff missing throughout the buys. So job security is a massive issue at the moment, I think. And what we've probably seen this year is more changes per team per week this year.
Yeah.
With players rotating through the team. So just having players that are going to be playing during the buys is a massive thing that you want to be focusing on.
Anyway, we'll move on to some options in terms of how we can deal with that. Now, considering McNeese and Mutimer don't look brilliant, we'll move on to Jamie Musgrave's question. Due to there being no decent rookies on the bubble this week, is it worth trading in a player that has had already one price rise, as players like Otten and Hampton potentially have to go? So Melican is the player that he brought up. He's currently priced at 175,000, having played three games, averaging 63 for Sydney. Moosey from the forums asked whether Parsons is the best available rookie this week, even after a poor performance and a price rise. So
he's just trolling.
But 152,000, I mean, if he's named again this week, like, would he be an option? And then Matt Grimston asked about Aaron Black at 198K.
He is also a problem.
So you think it's just a straight no then, Mark, for these sort of rookies that have gone up?
No, I don't. The one that probably interests me the most realistically is Malekan. I actually thought he looked really good on the weekend. It was against a pretty pathetic Brisbane outfit, though.
Is he a tall defender, though, Mark? Sorry, I don't
know. He is, but he's sort of scoring 60, which is pretty decent. I guess the worry would be that you'd think that Allaire comes back in, and I'm not sure where he sits with that, and they do have some defenders still to come in, so even he seems too risky. I think out of all of them, the only one that I might pull the trigger on would be Jared Berry. I think he just has shown a different role in the last few weeks and some better scoring capacity, but even him at 170 with only scoring 60s, like, these are like desperate moves if you like a really, really need cash.
I mean, yeah. Berry, he's played five games this week, 32, 39, and then 14 in round five, which really helped to stifle his price movement. But 62 and 60, that 14 has helped sort of keep it down. So I can see what you mean by sort of potentially holding value there. The back mid flexibility would be what I'd be considering paying the extra price tag for. But like you said, Mark, I think we're in fairly desperate times if we look at 170K price rookie who's top scored at 62 and go, that seems like a decent buy. Like, that seems really depressing.
It's really tricky. If you don't have cash in the bank, this week is really tricky. Yeah. And that's why we did recommend a double downgrade last week. There's a couple coming through. So you got David Myers, who it might even be worth going a week early on him. Yeah. He's probably not guaranteed best 22 at Essendon, but I think that he is best 22 at Essendon. He will come good. And the other one is Schaumburg. I probably expect him to be named this week or next week at the latest. He is actually building a bit of form in the VFL, and he was sort of a preseason favourite as well. Didn't score very well in the preseason cup, but disposal off halfback's been pretty good in the VFL, and he's sort of averaging about 100, I think. So, they're two that I'd look out for, even though Schaumburg's a bit more expensive.
Yeah, so we did get a question here from Fozzie Wolf. With no rookies on the bubble, could we break a golden rule and go 1 week early on Myers? Faz, do you kind of echo Mark's sentiments there about going early on these players?
In terms of David Myers, I do agree with Mark that I think he'll continue to get games at Essendon. I guess if you need it this week, then maybe you do it, but you're sort of robbing yourself for next week in that there really aren't any guys that we're expecting to be on the bubble next week. So I think, if you start sort of going a week ahead of time on guys like Schaumburg as well, you sort of get caught out eventually when nobody else rolls over. At least you've sort of delayed it by a week by waiting till those players get to two games.
You're in a tough spot if you're looking for a downgrade this week, is basically what we're essentially boiling down to.
Yeah.
Would you then consider potentially a mid-pricer? Because I know you traded in Matiro, and clearly that's a bit of creative accounting that you're trying to get through there. Thoughts on potentially going to a mid-pricer instead this week?
Look, I think that if there was someone appropriate available, that is definitely something that I would consider this year, just because I'm going to struggle not to have enough trades to get my team fully upgraded, but I'm going to struggle to have enough cash at any point to actually get them upgraded, and especially to get to any of these top line premiums. So yeah, I think that this is the season if the right, but the right player would have to come up. They have to have potential premium points in them, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least a potential 100K price rise.
We did get news on David Swallow. He's out this coming week. Not going to make the trip to China together with Gold Coast and Port Adelaide. Mark, I know you've held him for a really long time. I think there's a really difficult decision because, I mean, he spent 2 weeks scoring in the 40s, going down in price and missing some weeks. And then, you know, he finally scored a pretty good score on the weekend, and yeah, that's going to be an impetus to improve in price for the next two games that he plays. But he's missing this week. He'll miss the next week because of the bye. Like, how do you kind of deal with that, Mark?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So I actually ditched Swallow a couple of weeks ago when I realized he was going to be missed two of the next four. I thought that was probably too much, and now it's the next 2 weeks. And I know that I held Green in that situation. I guess that it's just tricky because he has copped another knock to the knee, so which is why he's not going to China. I think the plan is to probably send him to China. So that means that he's already shown a really significant propensity to get injured again this year, and they're worried a lot, like O'Meara, that the knee's just going to get worse. So they're really putting him through cotton wool. The advantage of keeping him would be if you can get through the next 2 weeks, he's then going to play right through the byes, you would hope.
Yeah.
Because of his injury factor, maybe he won't. So, look, I think it's probably time to cut your losses. That would be my advice. He's at a price where you could probably get to a decent premium from there, even if you had to use dual position status to get a premium in a different position. And I think that Beams is maybe... I'll be interested to hear what you guys say about Beams next, but Beams may force people's hands because you probably can't afford to carry both Beams and Swallow, given how thin most people's mid-benches are.
I think that's a really good point, Mark, but I think if I was faced with Swallow and Beams, I would trade Beams. Like, obviously, there's more risk with Swallow than Beams, but Beams might also miss quite a few weeks more than Swallow, who I think we're both probably a lot more confident about coming back in 2 weeks than potentially Beams, who might be, I mean, a quad injury, sort of three is a minimum, like five is a like a very distinct possibility. So I'd be quite tempted to hold Swallow. I know that's maybe a little bit counter to what other people are thinking, but I think the value in him being buy free is kind of notable. He's only gone up 54K from your starting price point. And importantly, I kind of feel like if you've kept him up to this point, I kind of feel like you're priced into him doing well post-buy, recovering through the buy period, increasing in price fairly significantly, potentially being traded out 450K. And if you've held on to Swallow that long, it's kind of the story I'd be hoping to tell. I'd be fairly tempted to hold out just because, I mean, you've held on. How many people have held on? If you drop him now, you're only behind everyone else who's already traded him out. To get back that edge, I think you kind of have to hold him and hope that he turns it around.
Look, I think that the answer all depends on what your decision is to do with Beams. So
yeah,
Beams was listed as, I think it was 2 to 3 last week. In the original media release, they said that they'd give him 2 weeks off and then they would reassess.
Yeah.
On the injury list released today, he's listed as 1 week. I know that, was it a few years ago, Beams had a quad injury that, what, he picked up just before round one or something and ended up missing almost the entire year with it. So that's the concern that everyone has with Beams. But at the moment, he is listed as 1 week on the injury list.
For me, I'd be straight out on Swallow and then still strongly considering trading Beams given his injury history. But for me, Swallow is really the must-get-rid-of player.
Okay. We'll move into the next question here from Scott Warwick. I'm sick of Treloar. How many more fails do I/we accept?
The concern is that he went in for scans today and Buckley said that he's in at least some doubt to play this week and wouldn't tell us what the injury was. That is concerning. He said that he is expected to play against the Giants, but if he's carrying an injury and that means that he could even miss games, that's not going to look good for his scoring from here. And hopefully his price is close to bottomed out, and I guess, like, what do you do? Like, if you're trading a premium at this point, I think it has to be around the buys. I don't think that we have enough trades or space in our teams this year to be just dumping premiums at this point.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I think especially with Dane Beams, that we're all sort of thinking how to deal with as well. It seems a bit luxurious to ditch Treloar, despite the fact that he's not even managing a triple figure bloody average in the midfield, which is exceptionally frustrating. So I'm sorry, everybody that's picked him off our advice, because we're all exceptionally frustrated too. But I think most of us are kind of just hoping he turns these things around. And I held on to Treloar through some pretty tough periods last year for him to finish off the second half exceptionally strongly. So I would tend to agree with what's been said so far. Now, let's finish off the trade-off out targets by just sort of rehashing where we ended up with Beams. I still have him in my team, but I'm looking quite seriously at trading him out this week, especially with the lack of downgrade targets. I think it almost makes sense to do a side swap with Beams instead of forcing a downgrade that I'm uncomfortable with. So Beams to me is even more likely to be traded out. Mark, your position?
Tricky. All week I've sort of been thinking of trading Beams. I will actually maybe even have to trade him depending on how selections go.
Okay.
Just because I might end up with a zero otherwise. Like, I've been debating all week who I'd go for, and my initial started off with, like, get him to Bont, and that seems like an upgrade, which is awesome. But then I don't think that I can justify spending that much money on upgrading someone that I already expected to be a premium.
Yeah.
Which means I could make a small upgrade, which makes it less worthwhile doing and using the trade for. So, yeah, they're the sort of things I'm battling for with this week, and I'm probably 50-50 on trading him out at the moment.
All right, let's move on to the trade-in targets now. We'll start off with this question here from Lawrence. He has 200K in the bank, and he still has O'Meara, Otten, and Hampton, who are all on the chopping block. He's thinking whether or not he should go with a pure premium upgrade, so going to someone like potentially Bontempelli, I suppose, or Sloan at that full price, and downgrading fully to a rookie, who we've discussed are marginal. Would you potentially be more attracted by two value mid-prices instead? So a Heaney and Hibbard type. And I know they were both on the bubble last week, but they still present some value this week. If not them, then maybe you'd consider a Heath Shaw type or Jack Stephen type. We have a few questions about some underpriced premiums. But basically, the question boils down to, would you consider two value mid-price-ish premium picks instead of a true premium?
Yeah, I guess that's something that I'm battling with myself. I don't think the answer is really clear, and I think it depends on your own team structure and how much cash generation you have got coming out off the bench. My opinion hasn't changed a lot since last week. I think Heaney is a brilliant pick this week, and I'll be more than likely picking him up. Hibbard, for the reasons we were a bit concerned about him last week, I have some doubts, but I still don't think he's a terrible pick, and he didn't go up much in price. So, like you said last week, Marcus, I think he's priced probably close to appropriately. But if you could get some combination like Heaney and Heath Shaw into your team this week, I think that would be a couple of brilliant upgrades.
We'll move on to the next question here, and we'll move on basically to the positions now. This question is here from Brad Judge. Should we bring in Heath Shaw while he is priced so low?
Things have changed a little bit for Heath Shaw. He now has more competition for the points coming out of the back line, and in the first half on the weekend, Zach Williams was taking more of the kickouts than Heath was. And Heath was actually playing like on the wing and on the half-forward flank at different points, but which I don't think is actually good for his scoring. But with some injuries to players like Adam Kennedy and Nick Haynes, I think that they're going to need Shaw in the back line for the next few weeks, and that's going to be good for his scoring. So, yeah, I think that he is a very good in at the moment.
Next question is about Jake Lloyd, who's currently priced at 488,000, and he's averaging 96.67 at the moment. So, basically, full premium price. And he's put against Zach Jones, who plays for the same team, averaging only 2 points less at 96.5. He's currently priced at 462,000 and has a 35-point break even after a massive 143 on the weekend. So I know definitely people are looking at backline upgrades this week. If you were choosing between these two Sydney blokes, how would that go? Would Jake Lloyd's sort of back mid flexibility put him over the top over Jones?
I think that Lloyd has just been an absolute stats beast this year and just super consistent as well. So Lloyd, as far as the longer term reliability goes, I know that Jack, who I was speaking about earlier, who's 51st, he started with Jones, and at 300,000, Jones was an absolutely sensational pick. But when you're paying basically premium price, Lloyd's the one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Just keeping in mind that he has a bye clash with Carlton, who, like, you're looking at Doherty, Simpson, and Marchbank.
I mean, Jake Lloyd, his lowest score is 84. That's pretty damn consistent. Most of the premium midfielders are struggling to sort of average that consistently, so definitely seems like the pick for mine. Next question here is from Alex. He's asking about whether Dylan Roberton will be a top six defender. He's currently sitting at the fourth top scorer in the back line at the moment, behind just Doherty, Adams, and Laird, who are absolutely killing it, and probably the sort of the top three must-haves of the preseason. Faz, thoughts on Roberton? Do you see him sort of keeping this up? Those four are clearly a step above the rest, Jake Lloyd being fifth and being sort of almost 10 points below the average of Roberton.
I've got him in our draft league and I've been watching him pretty closely, and he definitely, I think, has the potential to be a Doherty of this year. I'm not sure that he will go quite as high as Doherty last year, but I think he's a really, really good chance for a top six defender. With that said, I wouldn't pay $550,000 for him. I think you just hope he has a down game at some point, and then pick him up after that. I think even 520 last week was probably borderline on too much or a lot to pay for him. So yeah, I just think that it's just been proven so many times, Marcus, that you don't pick defenders at the top of their arc.
100% agree with that. I think it's not just defenders, but just players in general. We move on to the midfield now. This question's from Lincoln Beggs. He's comparing Bontempelli to Tommy Rockliffe. So these two are some of the top scoring players at the moment. Bontempelli at third and Rockliffe at fourth, only behind Waite and Sloan. And Waite's only played two games, so that barely counts. So number two and number three. Now, they're priced at $605,000 and $590,000 respectively. Rockliffe had a 53 last week, but that was off the back of a 176 in round four, and then a 148 last round, helping to prop his price right back up. He only dropped 25,000 off the weekend. It makes them a lot closer than I would have thought heading into this weekend. I thought Bontempelli would be the slam dunk, but thoughts on Rocky Bont as sort of must-have plays?
I would be lying if I said when I saw Rockliffe's 53 last week, I wasn't, you know, a bit excited as a non-Rockliffe owner. I thought, you know, here we go, we'll just all be Rockliffe owners by the end of the year, because, you know, you can't say no once when he's going to have a huge dip. And then what does he do? He comes out and scores 148 to halt that price drop completely. For mine, I think that the discussion between Bontempelli and Rockliffe for me is probably getting to the academic point, because I think that looking at my team and looking at where the cash generation is coming from and what price players are up to now, I don't think I can afford either of them, and I'm probably going to be sort of more looking for the value picks. Dusty Martin's at 519. I'm probably going to be jumping on a guy at that price rather than trying to chase the points that these guys have already scored, and I guess just cross my fingers and hope that they don't, you know, just keep powering out the scores that they are, because if they do, can't keep up with the leaders of Supercoach this year. But also, I think that chasing those points late, the teams that are up there already have those players. I just need to hope that they don't keep scoring so highly. So that's the approach I'm taking at the moment.
That's actually pretty depressing, Faz. And the reason why it's depressing is because I sadly agree with you and a lot of what you said, and I've come around to that realization myself. If you're picking either of those two, they got the same buy. I honestly couldn't split them. I think Bontempelli's got the better injury history, so maybe lean there. I could see them both averaging 120 to 125 this year. Yeah, just both guns and top. They'll be top line scorers this year, and I'm glad that I've got Rocky in my team. But yeah, I agree with Paz. I think that it might only be 60, 70, 80,000, but that's like contributing towards making another upgrade that I'm really going to struggle to find that money somewhere else. So personally, Merritt and Dusty are probably more enticing for my team.
We did get questions about sort of Dusty being a more attractive option just due to the relative price point that he's at. So Dusty, he had an absolute blinder to start the season, 159 and 155 in his first 3 weeks, but then 54 in round four, and then not hitting the ton since. His price has plunged a fair bit. He's at 519,000. Now, Mark, I mean, am I getting that right in the sense that that's an 80K price difference between a bloke that's averaged you know, 125 in the past in a Rocliffe type. And Martin, who's currently averaging 108, like the value in the actual price tag is enough for you to forfeit that potential, you know, upside in Rocliffe.
Yeah, and what I'd be hoping, similar to Fazan, is not that Bont is all of a sudden going to average 100 and Dusty's going to average 120, but that maybe Bont starts averaging closer to 115 for the season and Dusty goes up to about 115 for the season. And if you can get a situation like that, then you've had a huge win by saving that cash. So,
yeah.
And I think, like, after three rounds, I thought Dusty could be close to a must-have this year. I was a genuine believer that this might be the year Dusty does a Dangerfield-type breakout. But then he picked up a groin injury. So does that linger? Does that sort of carry on throughout the season? His dream team output, and so his numbers have still been pretty good, just sort of not hitting targets. And Richmond seem like they're a genuine finals contender. And if they are, then Dusty is a good chance of getting 115. So, look, think that he and then you've also got with Dusty the round 12 bye, that can't be underestimated really. So yeah, there's a bunch of factors there, and there's a bit more hope in it, and it is sad, but yeah, that, I think sometimes you've got to be humble and find a different way.
So we'll move on into the forward line now. The next question is about Heaney. We've already covered him briefly, but 453k, he's only gone up 20,000. His break even's 43. His first round, that 75's officially cycled out. So in his last 2 weeks, he's only averaged 100 plus. Now, is that good enough to deem him a must have? Has last week sort of consolidated on the fact that he's a top six forward in your mind, Mark?
Yeah, he had 57 points in the first quarter, and I know it was against Brisbane, but definitely loved to look at him the last couple of weeks. He's a value player and just the sort of player I feel like I need to be taking a gamble on this year, and fun to watch as well. I guess the main thing you got to look out for is buys. If you've got Dalhouse, McRae and Buddy, then you probably can't take Heaney.
So, Mark, I know you don't have Franklin and you don't have Heaney, and you could take one of the two in buy-wise. Assume a donut for one round. Off the 160, Buddy's now break even's 32. His price tag has gone up 20,000 to 467. They're fairly similarly priced. Would you just take Buddy ahead of Heaney, or are you that confident in Heaney that you'd take him? I mean, at this stage, it's relatively blind considering their scoring history.
I think that Buddy scored so well against Brisbane, and we've seen Rewald get a hold of Brisbane this year. And I think a few key forwards will, so I think that that is probably a bit of an outlier, that score. He looks in good form, but Sydney is struggling. I'd rather have a midfielder than Buddy this year.
Yeah, if I had the two side by side, it's hard to disagree with what Mark's just said there, that you know, you take the midfielder over the key forward, because you know, I got Buddy for the big scores, and he just had one, so yeah. I'm happy. But yeah, if you're picking a player right now, I'd go Heaney, I think.
Yeah, good call, Richard. So I'd definitely go Heaney if you're choosing between the two. Now, last question for the week. Brad's asking about Yeo and whether or not he's going to be a top six forward. Now, I feel like we've talked about Yeo for a while now. He scored three scores above 139 in the short seven-round period, which is that's nothing to be laughing about. That's Rocky Ablett-type numbers. Tagging five when he scored the 150 last week. He was playing a little bit of a looser role and he scored 125. Like, we've seen his upside and his downside in the past, but if he's regressing to that upside, even at 525,000, I'd say that's a pretty good buy this week. His break even's 33 and he's set to increase even more. So I wouldn't have any issue bringing him in, and I would assume he's a top six forward moving on. So I'd be fairly comfortable with that. Having said that, I mean, we talked about value being pretty important consideration this week, and he, I don't think, presents a lot of value at 520. So if you are concerned about value, then potentially you'd have to pass on Yeo. To me, he seems like a top three or four forward for the year.
The concern would be that he was on like 40 odd points at just before the three-quarter time break on the weekend, and scored almost all his points in the last quarter, which I guess that's a positive just because he sort of did it when the game was on the line and just completely blitzed that game. His only two low scores so far this year have come at the MCG, and they don't play again there this year. That's probably enough to say he will turn out to be a really good pick.
Should we go to a captain's corner now to wrap up the week? So Strandica is playing on a Sunday afternoon at 1:10, and Darcy Cameron, if you've got him like myself, he's playing the last game of the round, North in Sydney. So considering a lot of people have either of those two blokes as their loopholing ruckman, I think this week's looking like a pretty schmick week. Pruce, if you have him, he's also playing that last round against Sydney, so if he doesn't get named, you'll have him as an option there, on top of all the other outs that we're sort of copying at the moment. So I kind of feel like it's fairly freeform from picking your vice captain from a Saturday game. So I'm personally going to pick Dangerfield again. I know he scored 110 last week, which isn't brilliant, but it isn't terrible either. But Geelong's lost 2 weeks in a row. They're playing Essendon. I'm going to give him a punt and then take a captaincy option from probably five, seems the most likely for mine.
It's a brave call going, you know, Dangerfield when he's about to get beaten by 50 points by Essendon. So.
That's who you're going with.
Having said that, I will go Dangerfield vice captain. And look, it's of the Sunday teams, I think Fife is the real standout there. I guess if I do end up bringing Dusty Martin into my team, then he'd be a consideration.
If you had Gary Ablett or Robbie Gray or Dan Hanbury or Josh Kennedy,
I reckon I would steer clear from Shanghai just because of I don't think the footy players are used to the 10 or 12 hour travel that it would be to get there. So. I'd avoid that game just because who knows what's going to happen in Shanghai.
Mark, your thoughts about captaincy this week?
Looking maybe go a little bit different. I think that Rocky has only played in Tassie once and had a massive game down there. So Rockliffe versus the Hawks as the vice-captain and probably into Danger. I think that Danger's probably going to be reliable enough against the Bombers, who have been a little bit average the last couple of weeks. He should score right against the Dons. And I guess the thing there is that you miss out if Danger goes massive and Rocky does well. So I guess that's the risk. But maybe I think Rocky's more likely to go massive than Danger at the moment.
Yeah, I was choosing between Fife and Rocky for my captain last week after Dangerfield only scored the 110. And I picked Fife over Rockliffe, literally with 5 minutes to go on lockout for Rockliffe. So Rockliffe was my captaincy for most of the week. It was exceptionally painful. So I think I don't mind that, you know, Rocky going the VC. But there you go, three perspectives. But I think you're basically either choosing vice captaincy Dangerfield and then dealing with what's left, or going with captaincy on Dangerfield and trying to pick somebody forward. So those are kind of your two options there. I think that's enough for the round this week. All right, that's it for the week. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll catch you again next week. See ya.
See ya.
Bye. Jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy.